Welcome back to Sports Byline USA, coast to coast, border to border, and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It's our great pleasure to welcome to the show one of the greatest documentary makers of all time, Ken Burns, and he's here to talk about how he and Lynn Novick have the new documentary Hemingway, a three-part, six-hour film, which is now on PBS. Ken, you've tackled so many great topics and has gone in-depth on them, but have you ever done anyone as complex as Hemingway, so gifted, so troubled, so contradictory, so beloved, and in some cases so hated? This guy really was about as complex as it gets, isn't he?
It's exactly right, and the short answer is no. I mean, we've done other writers, Mark Twain, and I wouldn't take away from the complexity and the tragedy and the degree of suffering that he understood, still being the most funny person in the United States. You know, we've tackled the Vietnam War and the Civil War and many, many complex subjects. But I've been saying the last few months, you know, it just finished airing and is now available for free streaming at PBS.org, that this is our most adult film. And while it does have, I don't want this to be misinterpreted as about, you know, like a rating, it does have sexual content, and it's extremely interesting in that it belies a lot of that toxic masculine myth about Hemingway. But it's adult in that complexity that you raise in your extremely on-point question. Because this is a guy, his first wife said he had so many sides to him, he defied geometry. And that is exactly Ernest Hemingway. There is not an action that he did in which you are ready to say, that is the worst thing ever, you know, I'm done, that you can't find an equal and opposite reaction from another side, in which you go, oh my God, that is so amazing, that is such beautiful writing, that is such a generous thing that you did for that, you know, whatever it is, he is constant. It's like being in what seems to be, you know, calm surf, and suddenly going, uh-oh, there's riptide, you know, and just being dragged out. And so we've been wrestling with this story for almost 7 years now, and it is as complicated a beast as we've ever tackled.
Yes, the rhombus of writers. I always find it, too, interesting when people say, you know, I want to live like Hemingway. I want to be a Renaissance man and an ambulance driver in World War I and Spanish-American War. And then you say, well, you want to be a guy who had four wives and killed himself with his shotgun? I mean, why is he so still revered? Is it because the writing is just that strong, Ken?
It's a combination of things, and you've asked yet another perfect on-point question. The writing is superb. He's arguably the greatest American writer of the 20th century. He reinvented the short story. He reinvented the novel. He reinvented nonfiction writing as well. And everybody is in relationship to him. Even if you say, I want to be the opposite style of Hemingway, you're in relationship with him. And lots of great writers today who write owing their debt to him. So there's this extraordinary output of art. And then you have this kind of macho mythology that grew up. He was a naturalist. He was a big game hunter. He was a deep sea fisherman. He was a brawler. He was a man about town. He was all of those things. But he also invented it so it was bigger. And his prose was so accessible that it could be read by anybody. So if people who had never read a book in their lives or never read a novel in their lives, they may have read a Hemingway novel. One of the most poignant and beautiful interviews, I think, in our film is with John McCain, who, as a 14-year-old boy, found a four-leaf clover, went into his father's study, pulled down at random a book to press the four-leaf clover in it, and it was For Whom the Bell Tolls. And he sits down and he reads it nonstop. And completely and totally identifies at age 14 with the major character in this tragic novel, Robert Jordan, a flawed man, he says, you know, serving a flawed cause but trying to do so honorably. And he's, you know, if you want to know who John McCain is or was, you could study Robert Jordan, the character in For Whom the Bell Tolls. It's amazing. And yet we also understand that this has toxic consequences. There are four wives that he didn't treat well. There are children that at times were, you know, loved their dad and at other times were, you know, repelled by him. He could be incredibly kind to people and then incredibly cruel, particularly to people who'd helped him. So all of this is a kind of toxic brew that combines with a history of mental illness in the family. His father commits suicide, his own PTSD in World War One, him being abandoned by his first love with a horrible Dear John letter, which makes him suspicious of all future relationships. He's had 9 concussions that are CTE worthy, you know, major brain trauma that could produce the kind of depressions or dementia or suicidal ideation that his father committed suicide. Other members of his family committed suicide. He's an alcoholic. He's a self-medicating alcoholic. I mean, at the end of his life, this is a Shakespearean tragedy in which he is trying to outrun all of these different demons. And guess what? The demons win.
A couple more questions for Ken Burns about the documentary Hemingway on PBS. On a personal note, how much of yourself do you see in him? I mean, obviously not the cruelty and things like that, but I mean your time growing up in France and working in England and working in Italy and being so well, you know, received by the public for your journalism. Do you see a little bit of yourself in Hemingway?
You know, fortunately, you want to be as good an artist as him, and to tilt towards that objectives would be what anybody would like to be. You really have to admire his discipline, his work habits, up at first light and working, writing, disciplined, you know, all the time until noon, and then sort of easing up on the accelerator. And we'd like to think in our own work that we're that dedicated and we're that whatever. But, you know, we study these outsized characters, not because they're exactly like us, but because their features are exaggerated features that we all have. When he's jealous of a competing novelist or feels that he has to be in competing, even though he's the number one guy, you see a kind of pettiness that creeps into your own life. You know, the Greeks had a notion of heroism. We think heroism today is perfection. Heroism isn't perfection. It's the negotiation, sometimes the war, between a person's great strengths and their weaknesses. And that's for the Greeks. Defined heroism. I mean, Achilles had his heel and his hubris to go along with his great strengths. So when you deal, and these are big object lessons for the rest of us, right? When, you know, nobody's Achilles, nobody's this, but you see in them aspects of yourself. And so you begin to realize that all of these big, larger-than-life figures also help us in a way to center our own lives, to maybe make us try to be better. He wanted to be a great writer and a good person. And he said, I may not be either, but I hope to be both. And the jury's still out on the good person. It's very contradictory, and the evidence doesn't really support that. But he is a great writer.
Wow, very well said. And, you know, there's so many things about him, like nobody could burn a bridge like Ernest Hemingway. And yeah. I think about the story about you know, asking for a nice review for From Here to Eternity, which is one of the most scathing things, basically tells James Jones that he should kill himself. What kind of weight, and later in life, what kind of weight did he carry? Did people say, oh, don't listen to that old drunk, or was still everything he wrote just gold?
Well, no, not everything. He wrote some really awful. In fact, I think he reacted to From Here to Eternity in large measure because his own supposed World War II novel, which everyone was waiting for, certainly after A Sun Also Rises, and particularly A Farewell to Arms, his novel masterpiece, was that, where is it? And it was a terrible, it was dreck, it was embarrassing. It had, his third wife, Martha Gellhorn, said, the sort of the odor of decay. You know, I mean, that's what they thought about it. So I think he's behind that macho posturing, behind the willingness to, you know, go out and fight outside, he's incredibly vulnerable, incredibly sensitive, and on a good side, incredibly empathetic to others, including women. And he puts it in his stories in spectacular ways in Up in Michigan and Hills Like White Elephants, 2 stories I really recommend. It'll blow your mind that these were written, you know, in the 20s and early 30s and not yesterday. And he's able to put himself in a woman's position. So he's going to confound us. There's never going to be an easy square hole that this round peg is going to fit into.
Well, whenever there's a documentary and you hear that Ken Burns is a part of it, you know it's going to be good. And this is, says he and Lynn Novick's Hemingway, which is now out on PBS and on demand to PBS.org. Ken, can't thank you enough for coming on. Great stuff. And hopefully we catch up on your Muhammad Ali one. That would be great.
Yep. Coming out September 19th.
Perfect. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. We'll come on back on Sports Byline.